The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Americans know that they're paying $5 for gas at the pump on average nationally right now. What most of them don't know is that their investment accounts are being weaponized to actually create that result. Because what the world's largest asset managers are doing, starting with BlackRock, the biggest one, they're using the money of everyday citizens to show up as the largest shareholders at companies like Exxon, at the U.S. energy companies across the natural gas sectors and the oil sectors, and to tell them to produce less. Why? To prepare for a green energy transition, but in ways that most people whose money they're investing would not want to actually see happen. So that's a big abuse of the everyday citizens of this country and their investment accounts. That's the first step in, I think, educating the American people on how we are actually empowered to drive this change, not just through the votes we cast every November, but through the votes we cast every day with where we invest our dollars.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I think that's such a great point. That was Vivek Ramaswamy, and you might have seen him before as a regular commentator, and I think his insights are on. I want to talk today about an observation I have made. I'd love to get your take on this one, too. So many companies have gone woke, right? We have seen what wokeism has done, and I've seen a bunch of reports. The top 100 brands in this country, guess what? They're non-woke. Right? Corporations with Roe v. Wade have been very silent. I think they learned from Disney. Let me fill you in on what's happening here. Anthony Esalen is going to be stopping by. We'll tap into his expertise. And I'd love your perspective, your experience as well. The Federalist, I was reading them. They were reporting that there was a school board director in Washington State, right? Also owns a sex shop in Bellingham. And this guy just, and again, forgive me for, I don't want to be crass, but I just want to show you where we are, okay? I'm trying to paint a picture here. He's planning a series of workshops for children as young as 9 to discuss, and I don't even want to say it. I don't think I will say it. Certain sexual practices, personal sexual practices. Children, the age of 9, what is going on in our culture that we want to attack our children, indoctrinate them? It's shock and awe for kids. A 9-year-old doesn't need to have a workshop to discuss that type of thing. Doesn't need to have a workshop to discuss safer sex practices and all kinds of sexual activities. That's downright dark. It's evil is what it is. It's absolutely evil. But again, it's not my story. I'm reporting what the Federalist was just reporting. This is a school board director, The classes are offered under the name Uncringe Academy. And it'll be for 9 to 12-year-olds. And then the 13 to 17-year-olds are going to have their workshop a few days later. So one of the board directors, a woman named Jen Mason, owns this shop. She told a local radio show in her area, told a host there, she says, well, we focus on how puberty works, consent and personal boundaries and defining sex and discussing why people may or may not choose to engage in these sexual activities. I'm thinking, these are 9-year-olds. These are 10-year-olds. How many of you got children that are 9, 10, 11, 12? Maybe you got grandkids that age. Maybe you got nieces or nephews. That's way, 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 way too young. And we saw what Disney did, right? They were furious when Governor DeSantis passed that parental rights bill because Disney wants to indoctrinate your kids, right? Wants to expose them to all of this transgender type of ideology and from kindergarten to third grade. I credit DeSantis for what he did. I think it's great. Took a lot of flack and heat for that. I don't think it was enough. I think protecting kids from kindergarten to third grade is not enough. You should be protecting those kids from kindergarten all through grade school, for sure, right? Absolutely. You shouldn't be teaching this stuff. I think it's up to the parents. When you get into high school and you start learning biology and anatomy and you're of an age, maybe it's a little bit different, but really, Uncringe Academy to teach kids about personal sexual stuff, I don't even want to go down there. It's ridiculous, but this is where we are today. This is what is happening. In Ontario, an LGBT group, they're hosting a youth drag show. The ad for it shows a kid who can't be more than 10 dressed up in drag, and it tells readers, hey, if you have an interest in dressing up in drag and performing, now's your chance, right? This is the crazy stuff that our culture is now celebrating, and it's a cultural celebration. And you know who's buying into it? And you heard Vivek Ramaswamy there saying, we can vote with our dollars. We can vote with where we invest. Who's investing in this? Who's promoting this? Who's behind this type of garbage? It's not just the educators, some of these radicals. Yes, of course, they play a role. It's major U.S. companies. Major U.S. companies are revising their policies or changing their products to conform with this. And Disney's a prime example. I shared with you the other day about this new movie, this new film out, Lightyear. They have a same-sex kiss in this. Why do you need a same-sex relationship and kiss in a kid's movie? It's unnecessary. In fact, it's damaging. You know, I don't think parents should have to deal with it. Right? It's not necessary. We hadn't had that for generations. And all of a sudden, you need to introduce same-sex characters and kisses. Kids are there to have fun, to dive into the fantasy of Buzz Lightyear, not to have to go home and say, Mommy, Daddy, I'm kind of confused. Why is Tim kissing Bobby? It's ridiculous, right? Apparently, the newest Thor movie is out. They're going to have a similar thing going on. So it's the entertainment industry plays a big role in this. Media does too. Hollywood does too. You know, we see this being pushed from our legislative branch of government as well. I mean, it's a strange world that we live in. And if you go against it, right? If you say, "Hey, this is crazy," right? You are targeted for cancellation. We live in this cancel culture. You're targeted for derision. I saw a story earlier. I don't know if you listen to Macy Gray. If you're familiar with her music at all, she's got some good hits. She was on Piers Morgan. He does a show called Piers Morgan Uncensored, I think. And she made a comment, got her in a lot of trouble. She says, just because you change your parts doesn't make you a woman. Sorry. That's what she said, right? Well, she got hammered for making that observation. Just because you change your body part, you know, you put breast implants or you change something else, doesn't make you a woman. You know, so J.K. Rowling heard about her because she got attacked by the LGBTQ community. And Rowling, you probably are familiar with that name. She's the author of that Harry Potter series. She came to Gray's defense when she was attacked online, and she says, I'm buying her an entire collection. And she tweeted out to her, I don't know, she's got 13, 15, 17 million followers. She tweeted out to them in defense of her. The unfortunate thing is Macy Gray's trying to walk back her statement, at least maybe tone it down. I understand she's got a brand and she's trying to sell albums. I don't think you should walk it back. I think you should stand by it. Let truth be truth, right? Let's not compromise. You've got an online mob that is attacking you. They call her a TERF, T-E-R-F. It's a derogatory acronym used by some of the leftists. It stands for Transgender Exclusionary Radical Feminist. That's what they're calling her. I think she just spoke the truth. I think we should be able to speak the truth and not be persecuted, not be canceled as a result of it. But she's an entertainer who got hit by this. But ordinary people are fighting back too. One final note, we'll talk to Anthony Esalen about this. He wrote a piece that I saw, and I really wanted to talk to him about it, in light of, we had Pride Month and everything that was unfolding. He wrote a piece called Celebrating Abnormal Behavior, and that's where we are today, right? Abnormal behavior, and I don't mean to be uncharitable. I really don't. I mean, we're called to love one another, regardless of our sexuality or our proclivities or things along those lines, but we're also called to speak truth and not to be ostracized or derailed for speaking that truth. Disney is a classic example of what's happening. Ordinary people are fighting back. Disney's profits are down. Lightyear, the movie I was telling you about, is a flop. Their stock has declined 40% in the last 6 months. And I just want to say bravo to you parents, to everyone out there that's saying it's enough's enough. You know, you want to go down this path, then I'm not buying your product. And good luck with it. You're responsible to the shareholders. Down 40%. Their stock declined 40% in 6 months. But when the top 100 countries, when the top 100 companies in the country, they're all enthralled with the woke agenda. I mean, it's hard to boycott them all. It really is. I'll give you the top, there are brands that are out there. These are non-woke brands. And believe it or not, they're the most popular. There was a poll that was done, an Axios Harris poll, and they looked at the top 100 most popular brands in America, and they found that those companies that did not get involved in woke politics, they did a lot better. In fact, the top 10 from Axio Harris, and there's a number of them, we can talk about it, but Trader Joe's is up there. Patagonia, the Hershey Company, Wegmans, Samsung, Toyota, Amazon, Honda, Sony. A lot of different companies are up there. We can talk about it. The number here is 888-914-9149. Let me invite into the conversation, though, a longtime friend of this program, Dr. Anthony Esselin, a professor of literature and a writer in residence at the Magdalen College of Liberal Arts in New Hampshire. It's good to have him here with us today. He wrote a book, and this is well worth a read. It's called No Apologies: Why Civilization Depends on the Strength of Men. And I'll tell you how you can get that. He also has an internet magazine called Word and Song. You can find him at anthonyesselin.substack.com. And his recent piece that I was referring to, Celebrating Abnormal Behavior, that's available at Crisis Magazine. We'll try to link over to it for you as well. Hey, Doctor, I am grateful for your time today. As always, I always enjoy our conversations. Welcome back.
Hi, Drew. It's great to be back here.
A lot of craziness in the world. Part of me doesn't like to even talk about it, to be honest
with
you.
But
I think it's really important, and I want to credit you and appreciate you writing the piece on celebrating abnormal behavior. I appreciate the perspective and the writing, and I'm glad you addressed that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the things, the examples that I gave. They're just the tip of the iceberg, right?
And they prove. I mean, they. Thank God for making our enemies foolish, because. They just step in it and prove what we've been saying all along. One of the inspiration behind the article that I wrote a few days ago in Crisis Magazine was that, but it's the sort of thing that we're seeing right now, right? I had said, as one of my arguments in a book that I wrote about 8 or 9 years ago, Defending Marriage, 12 Arguments for Sanity. And one of the arguments was, and it's somewhat counterintuitive, but I've been proved right, I think, is that when you condone or even more celebrate the abnormal behavior, it gets worse for the people who engage in the behavior. Not better, but worse. And the reason why it does, I mean, there are the host of psychological reasons why. The fundamental reason is this. According to the people themselves, when they're describing what they do, the attraction to the behavior is that precisely that it is transgressive, right? It goes beyond the boundaries. Yeah. It dares to be illicit, right? It flaunts itself as something not to be done. If that's the case, then the nearer you draw the line to what is normal, the less these people have to go into the abnormal, into the sick, in order to get that thrill of violating the boundary. Right? Mm-hmm. It just stands to reason. If that's where the excitement comes in. But if you draw that line way out there, or you fail to draw it at all, they have to push farther and farther, and there's no end to it. It's not enough then that you go to some seedy bar on the other side of town, or some trysting place of a forgotten state park.
Yeah.
That's not enough anymore. Now you have to be on parade, but that's not enough anymore. Now you have to have the children be in the parade, but that's not enough anymore. Now you've got to have the children acting up sexually. Hmm. And even that's not enough. Now you've got to join them, first by teaching them and showing them things. And we know where that eventually is going to lead. But there's no end to it, because the thrill is in the transgression. And the more lenient you get, the farther out they do go. And they have gone. And that's not charitable to them.
It's a slippery slope. It really is, and I don't think people recognize that. Let's take a few quick calls for you here. James is listening in Chicago. He's got a comment for you. Dr. James, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Esselin.
Hey, Drew. Hey. I haven't talked to you since December. I hope you got through the St. Andrew Novena. That's the last time I talked to you on the air.
That's always
anyways,
a battle.
Anyways, I made it. Yeah, I made it through again this year, so look forward to it again this year. So anyways, yeah, this is very, very obviously troubling. I've been involved in addiction recovery for 33 years, so this kind of, you know, goes along this line, and they're teaching kids mortal sin. I mean, kids. Yeah. I mean, if you think, you know, it's called mortal sin for a reason. You know, it's really like a war. It's just as bad as abortion. You know, you get kids addicted to that kind of behavior at that age, their life is going to be destroyed.
Yeah, you're quite right.
Especially kids who have
abortion. In this way, it's even worse. There, of course, abortion involves a death, but in this way, it's even worse than abortion. Nobody gets into the habit of abortion, but they're suckering these kids into a habit.
Right.
And that habit is, you're involved with addiction recovery. That habit is going to be addictive. And
it's so sinister that the kids don't even know. I mean, it's the slow poisoning of them. You know, you're distorting their reality, and they think that deviancy is normal, and it really is not.
Yeah, and what's being done to boys is disgusting. I mean, the drag queen business is all aimed at boys. Boys are more visually oriented than girls are. That's a neurological fact. Mm-hmm. And the images that are going, whether they're pictures or memories of actions or memories of things they see somebody else doing, they're going to be frozen in their minds forever.
I know.
I mean, even, you know, ordinary people, if you ask them, when was the first time you stumbled upon, perhaps you stumbled upon a bit of pornography, what was it? And I guarantee you, they'll be able immediately to see it as clear as day in their minds, right? Now multiply that by a million.
Wow.
And multiply its force. They're ruining these kids, and it's evil, and it's got to stop. And unfortunately, in our way are going to be plenty of people, a lot of single mothers, who are raising their boys badly, and use as a kind of fallback. My husband or my boyfriend or whatever was wouldn't have understood him anyway because he's trans or he's this or he's that, and they're. It's a little bit of that Munchausen syndrome where the parent gets a thrill out of inducing a sickness in the child. And here it's the case with a lot of the mothers. They get a thrill inducing a sickness into their sons that will keep their sons weak.
That's a pretty bold statement. I mean, they don't do that consciously? I can't imagine a mother wanting to do that.
You know what? It's impossible to detach consciousness from self-deception and excuse-making and your own thrill, right? Your own thrill at doing something supposedly dangerous that sets you apart from ordinary people because you are smarter than they are. Yeah. You're going to be special, right? God alone knows to what degree any particular person who engages in this is culpable.
Gotcha.
But I am sure, all of our decisions are bound up with, our evil decisions are bound up with self-deception. And,
but
this is not a new thing in the world, by the way. That sort of thing for certain kinds of people to do to sons is not a new thing in the world, but the sheer number of, the frequency of it now and the degree and the perverse form it's taken, they are new.
Well, I'll tell you, hold the thought. I got to take a short break. When we come back, Mike in Illinois, everyone else will grab your calls. If you want to join the conversation, sound off, share your own experiences, you're more than welcome to pull up a chair. Always good to talk with you. James, thank you for your call. The number here, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Taking a look at an article written by Dr. Esalen called Celebrating Abnormal Behavior. That's where we are today. We'll give you some solutions, too. Stay with me. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Get caught up on that conversation you missed by going to the Relevant Radio archives. Just select The Drew Mariani Show.
Yeah, lots of great content there. I was just talking to Maggie during that last break about some great conversations that we've had just this week alone on what it means to really be authentic Catholics. You know, to be authentically Catholic. What do you do? We dealt with the issue of purity and forgiveness yesterday and, of course, dealt with the precious blood and dealt with the founding of our country. We did so many different things. So go back, check out the archives. You'll find something I think that will educate and inspire you, and then share it with somebody else, okay? RelevantRadio.com, keyword, Drew. Just go to our webpage, /Drew. You know, I think it'll bring you right there. I'm joined today by Dr. Anthony Esselin. I'm grateful for him. He wrote a piece I stumbled across about a day or two ago called Celebrating Abnormal Behavior, and I thought, in light of all the wokeism that we are seeing in the culture right now, all these companies that have gone down this rabbit hole, right, where we see, you know, movies like Lightyear that are flopping, by the way, Disney wanting to have same-sex relationships and kisses, and, you know, their stock is down 40%. You see, I'll just hold any things. I won't drag you through the mud again. You know what I'm talking about here. I saw a report that, you know, these non-woke companies are the ones that are doing better. And I think people are tired. They're disenchanted with this type of stuff. There was a story I came across of a bank, right? This bank went woke. They started to virtue signal. They went ahead and they announced that they were issuing new employee name tags, including preferred pronouns. Pronouns matter, the bank tweeted. And then as a result of that, a growing number of people pulled their funds. They've closed their accounts. They moved their mortgages. And they shame the bank for this virtue signaling. So, you know, there is a power. If you disagree with the values that a company has, let them know. Close your account, move. Don't go watch the movie. Cancel the subscription. Do whatever it takes. We can do our part, and we should be doing our part to make a difference. We're going to be, I think, judged on how we conduct our lives, live our lives, and how we're a witness for Jesus Christ. Doctor, before we go back to the phones, let me just get your take on that. I mean, what do we do in what is a swamp? I hate to use that word, but yeah. Really, we are in quicksand, it seems like, with so much of this filth. And how do you bring light? How do you bring about change?
You can do a couple of things. First of all, I've been urging parents, don't get your kids smartphones, right? Don't have them have computers in the bedroom. The less there are in front of a screen, the better. They're going to be accessing poison. Don't think that a couple of nice chats that you have with your 13-year-old kid are going to be able to withstand the tidal wave of sewage that's going to come at them. Now, come on. They don't need that stuff. And we don't need to have it in our living rooms either. And no excuses. No excuses anymore. No saying, well, you know, it's just one little part of the show. Forget it. All right? Get rid of it. We're better off without it anyhow. We really do need to start building up wholesome human customs. And I've been talking about this for a long time now. One of the horrible things about the sexual revolution, counter to what they said was going to happen, is that boys and girls, young men and women, don't even like each other anymore. They don't trust each other. There's a lot of hard feelings. Marriage is in the tank. Frankly, there are very few ways that young men and women can have fun together in a wholesome fashion without, you know, having to go way out of their way to find something somewhere. We ought to be sponsoring all kinds of get-togethers, dances for people of all ages, right? Concerts, the ordinary things that people used to do that are no longer done.
Right.
And they're gone. Right? We need to bring them back. If the church has to bring them back, then the church has to bring them back. It won't be the first time in history that the church revives human things because human beings have forgotten how. And once we start to reestablish these wholesome things, a lot of fun, too, a lot of fun, maybe people, some people come to their senses and say, you know what, I don't know what they're drinking over there, but they're having a lot of fun, and nobody's having fun over here. It's a lot of flash, it's a lot of glare, but there's anger underneath it, and confusion, and sickness, and perversity. I don't want any of that. I don't want the headache anymore. I just want to be around ordinary people doing ordinary things.
That's well said. Let's do this. Let's grab a call or two. If you want to get in, I only have my guest maybe 10, 15 more minutes. If you have a question, a comment, a story, the number's 888-914-9149. It's good to have Dr. Esslin with us. Mike has been waiting in Illinois to join the conversation. Mike, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Esslin. Go right ahead.
Hi. How you doing, Drew? Great show as usual. Thanks. My comment is this, Drew. The bottom line is, as long as society as a whole has to pretend along with these delusional people, as long as society as a whole has to accept their delusional, sick, sinful behavior as normal, we are doomed. And that includes the church, because oftentimes these bishops invite in these people to give homilies, to visit, to all this stuff. That is confusion, Drew, and we know where confusion, what the root of confusion is. And the root of confusion is evil.
Yeah.
So we as a society have to stand up and say, no, your behavior is not normal. Yes, you need psychiatric help. But we can't do that because we're ostracized for calling people out. And then you have horrible things happen throughout our culture and throughout our society. In fact, we don't have culture anymore. We just have perversity.
You're quite right all the way through, and the bishops are to blame here, and so are many of the priests and many of the lay faithful. The next time that bishops in a group will give a passing thought to the welfare of boys in particular will be the first time in 70 years. We need to say over and over, right?
Well,
a boy is not a girl. A girl is not a boy. God made two sexes. They are not confusable. It's the first thing you notice about somebody. It's the last thing you forget, right? A man cannot become a woman. That's nonsense. He can no more become a woman than he can become a rock or a dog or a hyperbolic paraboloid. It's not possible. It's a lie. And to pretend that you can do this is to be engaging in sheer and ugly, frankly, really hideous fantasy. And to be parading this in front of impressionable kids is... And I would just say to everybody out there that I'm giving you leave to say this about any human being who seems interested in talking to other people's children about sex. Yeah. Any person, any adult who likes or wants to talk to other people's kids about sex is, by that very fact, a pervert. Okay? Because only a pervert would want to do that. I don't want to talk to anybody's kids about sex. Mm-hmm. Why would I want to do that? But if there's a person, that person, before I even know what that person is going to say, all I can say is that person is not normal, that person is sick, that's
a perverted thing to want. Doctor, we should put it in proper context. I mean, in an academic setting where you're learning biology or sexuality, it's okay. I understand your point. I just don't want people to misinterpret it. And the same thing with the bishops. I've always come into the defense of the bishops because I have many who are friends, as I'm sure you do. Many of these men are very noble, good, and faithful men. There might be a few there that will go down a path that they shouldn't, but I always hate the broad brush, the church, too. So I just always want to try to come to their defense because I hate to see them solid.
Yeah, I kind of meant them as a group, right? Because I haven't heard anything coming out of the USCCB in all my life that has given a passing thought to, their corporate self. They've never thought about any of these. They never talked about any of these things.
And again, I understand what you're saying, but I think the church is very clear teaching. I mean, you go to the USCCB's website, you're going to find teachings and sexual ethics and a whole litany of things. But no, I do. Because you, look, and it's a frustration. You're not alone. There's a lot of people. You know, I hear it all the time in my emails and on the air. There's a frustration. And I've said this before, and I've got to take the plank out of my eye before I take the speck out of somebody else's. But we're going to be accountable. We've got to stand up and speak truth. And I think the reason we're seeing an exodus out of the Catholic Church right now, we see these nuns, we see the lack of belief in the true presence, is because we're not speaking truth in the light of this culture. We want to be PC, we want to be politically correct and get along. We don't want to offend anybody. Yeah. And by that silence, it almost is equivalent to an acceptance in some respects, and people have confusion, and they leave the church. People want to be held to a higher standard. I, to your point, I think we need to speak truth, even though it may not always be politically correct.
Well, it ultimately, it's to the benefit of everybody, right? But you know, if our church leaders were concerned only with earthly success, I'd think that they would look at what has happened to the various Protestant denominations that have gone down this road already. They're dead. You know, they're all dying off. Right. It's as if they all took a suicide pill. So why would we want to take the same pill? I mean, even if your motivation is only earthly, it's an incredibly foolish thing to do. But, of course, our motivation should be beyond that. I mean, my gosh, those people who are doing these things to themselves and hurting children too, they need to be pulled out of the fire. First, the children need to be protected.
Right. Let's grab a few calls. Time's going to go quickly here. We've got a caller, anonymous, coming out of Chicago. Uh-oh. Good afternoon. You are on the air with Dr. Anthony Esselin. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Yes, I have really sincerely suffered greatly from being transgender and being attracted to people of the same sex, or I don't even call it the same sex. But I have suffered from this for as long as I can remember, since childhood, and I'm now 68 years old. And it's a real, real experience, a real condition. It's not something that people are just saying, oh, just to be cause political chaos or anything like that. It's really something that people experience interiorly that causes an extreme amount of pain. And as you get older, the issue is that you don't have children to look out for you in your old age, and that's another major problem. But I know for as long as I can remember, I reached out to my school counselor in my high school, who was a Benedictine nun, and that was her role, her job was to help me if I came to her with a problem. And I asked her one time, I was feeling her out, and I said, do you like to deal with big problems or only little problems? And you know what she said? She said, I only like to deal with little problems. Huh. So therefore, I didn't feel comfortable approaching her. Yeah. And then a couple of years later, we went to a retreat, and there was a priest, and people were sharing with this priest. Hello?
No,
what's
you're here.
The problem?
I could, yep.
Okay, because okay. So then I went to the priest, and I told him, and he said, I'm going to make arrangements for you to go to a therapist. And then he never got back to me. And one time I saw him down the hallway, and he saw me coming towards him, and he turned the corner so that he wouldn't have to encounter me. And I was totally ostracized, okay, mistreated.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let me just say this to you. First of all,
Go
ahead, doctor. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would... Before I even delve into this, I mean, I think we need a long session and a kind of therapy session. I'm not a therapist. I would want to know where the young man's father was in all of this. What was up there? What happened? Because in every single case that I've had any experience of, whether reading about it or observing it, or being told about it by the person himself, there's something bizarre that has happened, or something cruel that has happened, and usually, not always, but usually centers on the father, sometimes on a pathological mother, sometimes on older brothers, or someone has been molested or abused as a child. Because these things, frankly, don't happen in other populations where boys are brought up from the very time they're wearing pants to be alongside their fathers in the fields, to work next to their brothers, to, you know, that the identification becomes as natural as breathing. We don't see this in the Amish, for instance, right? And it's not because it's repressed. It's because the pathology never develops, because they're doing healthy boy things right next to dad and Uncle Joe and everybody all the day long. And the confusion doesn't develop.
Yeah.
We need to put on one side the care that we give to an individual, and on the other side, the principles of social action, law, and custom, which have to be far-sighted and affect everybody. Those are separate things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Doctor, I only have a few moments, and you know, again, I let's all pray and say a prayer for our caller here. Clearly, there's some woundedness, and my apologies for anything you went through that the church might have done that makes you feel ostracized or small. I really invite you to you know, just turn to the Lord and seek the healing that I know He wants to give you. But before I let you go, doctors, I only have a moment or two left. I want to make sure that I give you the opportunity to talk about No Apologies, Why Civilization Depends on the Strength of Men. I know that's a new book. Yeah. And I wanted to touch on that before we ran out of time. Fill us in on what that's all about.
Well, I'm you know, rather weary of hearing from young men that nobody's ever told them that it's good to be a man. That's just bad. That's wrong. Okay, I wouldn't put up with that if I was a woman. If somebody, you know, like 25 years old, nobody ever told me that it was good to be a woman. That's bad. Okay. I want to remind men that in fact they've been the builders of civilization for some very practical reasons. I mean, a lot of the things that are done to build a civilization can only be done by people with the physical strength of men. They can't be done by 14-year-old boys. They're not strong enough. And 14-year-old boys are stronger than their mothers most of the time. They are done by men, and they're done by men often at great risk to themselves. I want to call men back towards, not towards, you know, posing and say, oh, look at me, I'm big and strong, I did all these things, but to remind them of the goodness of being a man and of what being a man is for.
Yeah.
And not to be fooled, and not to apologize, not to say, oh, you know, I'm really sorry that in the days of Michelangelo, there were these studios and, you know, that only the boys were permitted to be apprentices. I'm not going to apologize for the studios that produce the greatest art in the history of the world. We don't need any apologies for that. When we start producing Michelangelos now, then then you might have cause to complain. But let's especially for the sake of boys who are getting beaten down by the messages they get from in school and from the mass media, right?
Well, you know what, Doctor? Let me do this. I've got to take a quick break here. I'd love to bring you back at some point in the future where we could talk about No Apologies, Why Civilization Depends on the Strength of Men. I think Satan's very clever. Clearly, he's attacked the role of masculinity in our culture. He's divided the family. He's attacked fathers. We have fatherless. That's an epidemic. And he's undermined the strength of men, as you point out. My guest today, Dr. Anthony Esselin, you can check him out online as well at anthonyesselin.substack.com. You can also go ahead and do a quick search for his book. His latest book is called No Apologies, Why Civilization Depends on the Strength of Men. We'll have him back to talk about it. Doctor, thank you. I wish we had a little bit more time. God bless you.
Thanks.
Keep up your good work. All right. When I come back, I'll change gears. I only have a few minutes left in the program. As I say, I wish I had all day. There's a new Harvard-Harris poll out. You want a little good news? This number surprised me and actually made me smile. I'll share that poll result when I return. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your life connected.
Hey, check this out. A poll that came out earlier this week, about a week after the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision was handed down, shows that the nation is just not as pro-abortion as some people want to believe. This gave me a smile. The numbers were pretty big, though. This poll, by the way, it was conducted by the Marist organization. It was commissioned by the Knights of Columbus. That's fundamentally who commissioned it. Absolutely no. Was not commissioned by the Marist organization or the Knights, who tend to do these pro-life polls, right? This particular poll was a Harvard-Harris poll, right? Absolutely no religious affiliation in this at all, because, you know, that could skew things. People are Catholic, you're probably against abortion, or you would hope, right? Somebody who has, it was Christian, might respect life a little bit more than somebody who hasn't have God in their life. Check out the poll numbers, though. 70% of Americans, 70%, 7 out of 10 support banning abortions after 15 weeks, and just under half would support bans at 6 weeks. Overall, here's the stunning number. 90% of us support some kind of restriction on abortion. So I don't care what the media says. I don't care what the placards, billboards, social media, big tech. I don't care what anybody says. America is a pro-life nation. I've always said it. I still believe it. Poll numbers are beginning to show that as well. More than a third support banning abortions almost completely. I think those numbers are going to continue to tack once we are able to show the dignity of the human person and really take care of mothers. That's the next big area I think that we have to focus on. According to the same poll, 45% of Americans support the Supreme Court's ruling of overturning Roe v. Wade. 55% oppose it. That's a big change from May, when a different poll found that 64% of Americans didn't want Roe overturned. But things are changing. Michael New joins me. He's an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, a research associate at the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. It's always good to have him. He's an expert on these numbers. That's why I've asked him to stop by. Follow him online, too. His Twitter handle's @Michael_J_New. Michael_J_New. And you can go ahead and follow him on Twitter. Good to have you back, Michael. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, I smiled when I saw the data that came out from that Harvard poll. So it's not like somebody had a hidden religious bias. You might say, oh, the Marist did it, or the Knights of Columbus. There's a bias written into the questions. That's not the case. What happened between May and June? How do you read those numbers?
Well, the important thing that happened between May and June is the Dobbs decision, and Roe v. Wade was reversed. But more importantly, people are now learning what Roe v. Wade actually did and what the reversal now means. I think the problem with a lot of Roe v. Wade polls in the past is it was not clear what happens when Roe v. Wade's overturned. Many people thought incorrectly that if you reverse Roe v. Wade, abortion is banned everywhere. That's not the case. Now abortion policy is being set by the states, where state legislatures can make decisions. So it's no sweeping ban on abortion. You know, thankfully, we have about 11 states where unborn children right now are being protected. But when people actually learn about what the Supreme Court did and, you know, aren't being misled by the media, there's actually a lot more support for, you know, letting state legislatures decide abortion policy than, you know, 9 unelected judges.
My guest today is Michael New. Michael, there's been fallout from the decision, you know, and as it happens, you know, states are going to decide for themselves now how to regulate abortion. How will that process, do you think, how people think about this issue? Will we see the same partisan divide, the same type of numbers we've seen when it was, you know, when Roe was in place on the state level? Or do you think attitudes are changing now? I mean, there's been other polling that's been done. When they ask Americans what's the biggest concern for them, it's inflation, it's economy, it's mm-hmm. gas prices. I mean, abortion is the very bottom of that mm-hmm. list. You know, less than 5% people say that's the number one issue for them. But I'd like your take on what you see coming, how attitudes might change or tilt one direction or the other in the days ahead.
Well, I think right now Americans are still, you know, very polarized about abortion. You know, I think that obviously we're in a situation now where pro-life people can actually change abortion policy. And we're going to go into the state legislatures and try to make arguments for the preborn. And I think that's going to, you know, bode well for us. You know, I think that, you know, ultrasound technology has developed greatly, you know, over the past 40 years. Very often the first picture somebody sees of a son, daughter, brother, sister, niece, nephew is in utero. And I think, you know, when people do see the humanity of unborn children, they're more receptive. And when they realize about the pregnancy help that we offer, pregnancy help centers often don't get much attention outside of pro-life political circles. But there's 2,700, you know, pro-life pregnancy help centers doing a great job offering a very wide range of services for women. They're getting more attention now. And when people see the pro-lifers, you know, all willing to step up and all willing to help women in need, you know, people will be more receptive. So I'm confident in the future.
Yeah, I am too. You know, it'll be, we've got big elections coming up, midterms followed by the generals, right? And the party of power right now, the Democrats, are convinced that people are going to head out to the polls in droves in November. They're going to vote against what the Supreme Court ruled. And again, the polling I'm seeing, the data I'm seeing says that's not the case. This is not, you know, the issue that they thought it was going to be. What's your read on the situation, and how does this play into the political dynamics? Look, November's still multiple months away. How do you think the Dobbs decision, the overturning of Roe, will play at all when it comes to the vote?
Well, I don't think it's going to have that much of an effect. You know, I think right now pro-life people are already voting Republican, and people who support abortion are already voting Democrat. And interestingly, this Harvard Harris poll that just came out kind of backs that up. You know, they looked at, you know, will the decision affect your vote in the 2022 midterm elections? And 36% said they'd be more likely to vote Republican, and 36% said they'd be more likely to vote Democrat, you know, right down the middle. 29% said it have no effect. So I don't see a big backlash against Republican or pro-life candidates. And it may even, you know, incentivize pro-life people to vote Republican, knowing that we can actually do things now legislatively we couldn't do previously. So I think that, you know, it's not going to work to the disadvantage of pro-life candidates, and in some cases it might even work to their advantage.
That's for sure. Michael, I have a moment or two left. I want to put a plug in for your organization as well. You do wonderful work there at Charlotte Lozier. Tell everyone what you're working on and best way to get connected to you.
Best way to get connected to me is through Twitter. I'm at Michael_J_New. I write about the social science of pro-life issues. I'm going to do a piece on some of the polling about Roe v. Wade and Dobbs sometime in the near future. I'm also doing research on impact of pro-life laws and the life-saving impact of pregnancy help centers. And when I get those studies published, they'll be put out on Twitter, and hopefully I'll get the chance to talk to you about them.
Yeah, I love that. You know, speaking of these pro-life crisis pregnancy centers out there, I mean, they've been under major attack, you know, recently, and there's a lot of people who are angry about Roe. There are journalists, there are people like Nancy Pelosi, there's a lot of others. There was going to be a so-called a summer of rage. We didn't see that. I mean, pro-abortion leaders have called for this, which I think is terrible, right, in response to the repeal of Roe. But we're not seeing the passion there either. The pro-life movement, I think, is once again, you know, choosing love. I think it's the right thing to do with Students for Life declaring this to be a summer of service, which I thought was a great response to the summer of rage. What do you see happening? Do you think things are going to ratchet up over the summer or not so much?
You know, I think the worst is over. And, you know, there have been some attacks against pregnancy centers, and we do need to be aware of that, that the Capitol Hill Pregnancy Center here in Washington, D.C. Was vandalized. And, pregnancy centers and pro-life organizations do need to be, you know, aware that there are safety concerns. But I think that, you know, the initial, you know, reaction to the decision will subside. You know, I think pro-life people need to, you know, obviously keep their wits about them. Yeah. And, you know, pro-life pregnancy centers, you know, should invest in security if they, you know, feel endangered. But I don't really think that you're going to see, you know, a lot more in the way of acts of violence moving forward.
So here's one final question for you. And I was thinking about this. I had a conversation with somebody the other day. The March for Life is traditionally in January in Washington, D.C. Brutally cold, you know. Weather can be quite inclement there. With the overturn of Dobbs, some are saying, hey, let's move it to the end of June. What do you think? Should the March for Life continue June, or should we keep it in January? To honor the fall or to remember Roe?
Well, honestly, I think my opinion may be the minority here. I think we should keep in January. You know, I think that it's easy for kids to get out of school for the weekend and make a big showing in D.C. that weekend. During the summer, some people are on vacation. So I think we still need to commemorate January 22nd and the 60 million lives we tragically lost. But I would say over the summer, what we should do is like 50 state marches. So states are really where the action is. And to mobilize pro-lifers in the states, we should really be marching in the states every summer. So that's what I would do.
I love that. Perfect answer. I'm going to leave it there because I'm out of time. Michael, thanks for stopping by. We'll catch up again soon, okay? Always good. Okay. It's Michael New. Follow me at Michael_J_New. Follow me at Drew Mariani or at Drew Mariani Show. Follow the show page. And be sure and tune in tomorrow. I'll tell you what, we've got some interesting conversations heading your way tomorrow. There was dozens of sailors who claim they were on a warship. They say they were swarmed by at least 100 unidentified flying objects, UFOs, or unidentified aerial phenomena. Dr. Paul Thigpen just came out with a brand new book. It's called Extraterrestrial Intelligence and the Catholic Faith. Are we alone in the universe with God and the angels? We'll take a look at that tomorrow. I'll give you the latest and a whole lot more. We got a lot to get into. So join me. We'll give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. And pray for me. I could use your prayers, and I promise you my prayers, okay? I'll be praying for you this evening. We'll talk again tomorrow. Until then, have a good evening, good afternoon, and may God bless you.